You got elected, man.
Hi, group. I'm Colin Mahadic. And I know through God's grace that I'm here clean and standing in the convention. Because it wasn't my dream to grow up and be an addict. I got here in 1990. And denial was a big part of my story. I was 43 years old when I got here. And what had happened, I had a trade that kept me out there a long time. I was an air conditioning heat mechanic. And that trade kept me out there a long time. How it kept me out there a long time, every time I spent all my money, somebody would call me and say they had a side job for me. And then people knew that I worked, so they would loan me money. So it took me a long time to hit. I really didn't hit a physical bottom. I never did lose a lot of things. People had gave me money to buy another vehicle. People gave me vehicles. And I'm saying all that stuff ain't do nothing but keep me out there. You know, and just kept me in denial. While people was losing stuff and couldn't get it back, they would never let me my head sink underwater so I can get the help that I need. And by people keep doing that for me, it just kept me out there. And what that done was it did a psychological effect on me. And because I wasn't losing nothing and staying out there, I was getting psychological, losing my mind. Because in the end, it was crack. In the beginning, it was a little bit of everything, you know. Because I was born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area. All the stuff that came through the D.C. area, I was a get-with-nit-with, and I used it, you know. Especially when my friends had it, and they was giving it away free. It wasn't, you know, no, I don't do that. You know, if it was free, I'll use it. But in the end, it was crack cocaine. And I remember when Lynn Byers died. I mean, we chased it harder, you know, than insanity. And I'm glad early in recovery, I went to a lot of meetings and heard the insanity. Because when Lynn Byers, they say he OD'd off of crack, smoking crack. I mean, we looked for it harder, you know. It was like he didn't know what he was doing, you know. We can handle it, you know. And I went up in VA hospital in 89. I had lost my mother, best friend and stuff. And I used a lot of drugs for it. My mother left me just a little bit of money. It wasn't a whole lot. And I smoked it all up. And I was I was probably under 100 pounds when I went up VA. And crazy as a June bug. And they just told me, just set up there. They wouldn't let me go to no meetings. And after 3 days, I was begging them people to let me out. And they told me I could leave, but it would be against medical advice. So I sat up there for 30 days. They didn't ask me to go to no meetings. Everybody was going to meetings. They told me, no, you just sit right here on this ward and just chill. And after 30 days, if I wanted to leave, I could leave. And that's what I did, because I had a vehicle sitting outside. And I told them I had some business. But before I left, nurses came to me and set me down. They said, please, you know, you're not ready. Don't leave. But I left anyway. That was in 89. And I didn't smoke no crack when I went home, but I drank. And I became an instant drunk. And people was, you know, picking me up out the street. And I lasted till 1990, till it was this girl's birthday. And she asked me to buy her a rock. And I bought her a rock and went into a hotel. And I bought me a six-pack of Bull and a half pint of Natty Head, about a pint of Natty Head. And I let her hit the crack. And I drank my stuff. But when I looked over, I told her she wasn't doing it right. And I hit that thing. And by 1990, I was knocking on VA doors again. And all them nurses and doctors looked at me, and they hugged me and said, you ready? And I was good and ready that time. This time, they allowed me to go to some meetings, and I heard something. And I follow suggestions, and I've been in this program 9 years, and I haven't been out of service since I've been in this program. And I do that for me because I have seen people set and drift off in them years. You know, and I'm not trying to drift off, you know, and isolate. Because, you know, I can have some business. You know, I got a trade that will keep me real busy. But I try to keep narcotics anonymous in my life. Because it's been real good to me, trust me. It's brought some sanity back into my life, you know. And then I have some structure. It gave me some structure, you know. And early in this program, being honest saved me. Because it was a lot of times I had the hardest thing for me to do was to pick up that phone. That phone weighed a ton. To get honest and pick up that phone and call another man and tell him what was going on between me and my woman was one of the hardest things in this program for me early on. And I picked up that phone and I had to tell that guy, look, this is what's going on. And he gave me some instructions. Now I had a sponsor who really wasn't in a relationship. And every time I dumped on him, he said, look, you know I'm not in a relationship. If you want my opinion, I'll give it to you. But I don't have no experience in that. He said, but do you want my opinion? And I would say, yeah. He said, this is my opinion. And I, you know, I'll feed off of that. But I had a network of guys that I could call. And early on, I was open. I was real open in this program because, I was scared. I was 40-some years old, and trust me, I was scared because early on, I mean, in the end, I had a vehicle, and all I was doing was riding the young boys around 3 or 4 in the morning, and when they got tired of using me, they would give me a crumb, and I had a riding partner who would ride with me with the young boys. And them young boys would give me a little pebble. And my riding partner wanted half of that. So about 4 in the morning, all we had was a pebble to share. And it wasn't feeling good, you know. And me having some place to go and having a job, and I found myself standing around all them abandoned buildings, doing everything all night long that I really didn't have to do. I remember coming home after 3 days, and because after my mother died, I lived with my two sisters. And after my mother died, I was using my sisters couldn't stand me. You know, every time I came in the house, they would leave. And I would go stay 3 days, and it was just like a dog would run away for 2 or 3 days and come back all whipped. That's just how I look. And soon I hit the door, they would say, ooh, stay right there. Take everything off. Leave it right there on the floor. And I had a script right there. They didn't want me to set on nothing. And they would say, well, just go upstairs and take a bath, you know. And I remember them things. And I remember my sister crying, you know, looking at me crying because she knew what I was doing to myself. But I followed some suggestions in this program, man, and my sister today say I'm her favorite brother. Because I still got two brothers today that's locked up. And it's no fun. And I think about my mother having three sons and all of us locked up at the same time, you know. What we sent her through, you know. My mother never saw me clean. But I have to say this. My father, he raised another family not too far from us, and that was some hurting stuff. And I used to have to walk to his house and get money. And he never visited us. He never gave us birthday cards, never did anything. And as we got older, and people start, you know, like my mother passed and everything, my father tried to get back in my life. And like it was 6 of us. With nobody, you know, say nothing to him and everything. Because y'all gave me this program, I was the only one out the family that went to my father, hugged him, and let all that stuff go, you know. And I feel better. I mean, it's rough, all us sitting around the dinner table, my father coming over, and don't nobody want to talk to him. You know, people getting up, they really want to cuss him out. You know, but I'm going to show you how God works. The last time I went up VA hospital, when they asked me was I ready, it was because of my father. Now, he wasn't in my life, but he called me and asked me to come and get him and get some cataracts off his eyes. Because he'd take him to the VA hospital to get some cataracts off his eyes. Now, remind me, I was on a three-day run, and I was real tired, and I wanted to cuss him out. Tell him, look, man, you never did nothing for me. Leave me alone. But something said, okay, I'll take you. And I took that man up VA hospital, and that was the day I got clean. I haven't used since. So I'm saying, God put that man in my life for that one time and used me to get me back up VA hospital. And when I was setting up that hospital waiting for him to get cataracts off his eyes, I was in so much pain, I started talking to doctors, and they asked me what was wrong with me. You know, and after a three-day run, I was looking real crazy and probably was talking crazy. And they asked me, and I was a veteran, they asked me, did I want some help? And I end up on a ward with stuff all on my heart. They saying I was ready to have a heart attack. And they asked me what I was doing, and I was told them I was on a three-day run smoking crack. And they asked me, did I want some help? And I stayed up there for 60-some days, and this journey started. And I got a story in recovery, man. And what scares me about me is some of the crazy stuff that I did on drugs, I do without drugs. And I'm talking about in this program, being in a relationship, thinking crazy, thinking that the woman I'm dealing with got somebody over her house. And me going from one side of town, running red lights, stop signs, in the middle of the night, sober, going up there, and that woman sleep, and I broke her locks off her doors, going to that house and looking around for a man, ready to kill something. And after I did that and didn't find nobody, I felt real stupid. And I stood there, and then I started shaking and like, what's going on with me? Today I'm not in a relationship. And there's still some sick thinking going on. And I'm open for suggestions, and I'm willing to stay around in this program so I can get some help. You know, I know there's other places for me to get some help. But I choose to stay around in this program to get the help that I need. This program has gave me everything I wish for. I went to the New York convention, had a ball. My job then made me a supervisor. I'm not saying I'm 100 perhaps happy with that job, but I can say thank God I got a job. Because I'm not with the same company, but I'm at a place. The company I was with when I was using allowed me to go in treatment a couple of times. And I believe because they saw me before crack, and they saw me after crack. So they kind of knew the kind of person I really was. And they was hoping that I'll come back to the person that I was when I was on crack. And what they did was, it was a group of us that was on it then. And I know being honest can help you. Because what happened, they got about four of us and asked us separately. They got each one of us separately and asked us if we wanted some help. This probably was about 85, you know. So all us, a couple of us said, yeah. But one guy said, ain't nothing wrong with me. I'm all right. And they fired him. But the people who said that, look, yeah, we're gonna get ourselves together, they work with us, you know. So I guess we identified that we did have a problem, and they put up with our stuff for years and years and years. I don't know. I can't say too much about this program. I know I've been in service from day one. I mean, I came in. I worked with H&I. I made coffee. I was GSR. I mean, all these things kept me around this program. And that's how this thing been working for me. Honest, open-mindedness, and willingness. I mean, that's it in the program. I've been honest because I wants to stay around. I've been open to the older people getting their suggestions and staying around. Seeing people stand around, it makes me stay around. You see a guy with 15, 16 years, and I got 9, that's what makes me keep coming back. And going to them people, and that's why I got a sponsor that I can call every now and then when I... And it's hard to pick up the phone as time go on and you get business and you get a life and you're going and going and you don't call your sponsor as much as you did early in recovery. But I do have a sponsor. I do make contact with him. He's down here in this convention and everything. And this program been working real wonders for me. It's hard to talk 30 minutes. And that's probably my program. Smoke crack, I end up in treatment. End up in Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm on a journey of recovery. And it's been a wonderful journey. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Carl. Now I guess I'd like to announce our second speaker, Cassie.
Family, I'm Cassie, and I'm an addict. And it's real, real, real good to be here, you know. It's real good to be anywhere today clean, you know. First of all, I think I know I got to say this, you know. Number one, the convention has been real good for me. I've been having a real good time. You know, I've been just walking up and down. I was thinking about that tonight as I was, you know, walking here. I was thinking about how all weekend I've been just walking up and down the Broadway and just walking and how spiritual that is and how everybody is smiling and how I'm looking people straight in the eye and say, good evening, how you doing? Fine. That's not a natural thing for me, you know. But it's been real good and I've been having a real good time. You know, this is my first time speaking at a convention, and I would really want, my image really would want to tell y'all that I ain't nervous and I got this thing and I'm real cool, you know, that thing tell you, know, that being, what the literature talks about, being terminally hip and fatally cool, you know, and I would want to tell y'all that, you know, it's all right, you know, and that's my image, and that's the image that I portray most of the time, you know, but that's simply what it is, an image. You know, today was the first time, and let me say this first before I go any further, I want to thank the committee for asking me to come. I have no idea why, you know, but for some reason, they asked me to come and share, and for that, I'm grateful. I'm the most dishonest person that I really know, you know. And when they first told me that, well, you're going to share, you know, my first instinct was just like to say, you know, to be dishonest and say, tell them that you got something to do. Because I ain't want to, honestly, I ain't want to get up here and talk to y'all because I was, you know, I was afraid. I was nervous. And I just shared that today with my sponsor, and thank God for sponsors. Thank God for people that was here before me. And I shared that with my sponsor today. I hadn't shared it with anybody before today, that I was a little nervous. And I say thank God for sponsors because, as usual, they tell us exactly. They give us that suggestion that we need to put us right on key. You know, I sat here and I opened this book, our program, and the first thing I opened up, it talked about this simplicity is the key. And it talked about the symbol, and the very next thing it talked about was honesty, open-minded, and willingness. The literature also talks about how that, if we don't have that, it defeats us in our recovery. If we don't somehow get to some level of honesty, open-minded, and willingness, you know. I was not the addict that came to Narcotics Anonymous happy. As y'all say, I did not come to Narcotics Anonymous beaming with love. I came to Narcotics Anonymous screaming and scratching and hating and fighting and not wanting to be here. That's how I came. I did not come here beaming with love, knowing anything about honesty, open-minded, and willingness. I came here, I wanted to control my use of drugs. You know, and since being here, I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I made a decision. Wait a minute, let me back up. See, I'm dishonest. The methadone clinic that I was in made a decision for me because they kicked me out that probably it was time for me to make a change. And that was in 1995. And after they decided, I decided that I truly wanted to do something different in my life. And I began the process. And I sat around in Narcotics Anonymous on methadone for 6 months. And that was in 1995. Y'all do the math, you know. And since being here, it's different degrees of honesty for me, you know. They go to different degrees of honesty. First getting here, my honesty came truly as I admitted and that I was honest enough to say that I was an addict and I needed help. That was not an easy thing for me to do, to admit that I was an addict. Because I wanted to feel, I thought that I could control drugs, and that drugs really wasn't my problem. It was everybody else was my problem. Everything else going on in my life was a problem. But drugs wasn't, and I wasn't an addict. But certainly after coming here and being here for a minute, and hearing and just sitting and asking some questions, I came in here right away and got a sponsor. Because what drove me in here was what y'all talk about, the ugly side of addiction. You know, and I was driven in here by I was beat down. I was beat down by addiction, which made me become willing to change my life. And that ugly side, I'm talking about all the times, the physical pain, you know, the physical pain of being over that bathroom, toilet seat, puking my guts out on a regular basis. You know, I'm talking about physically being in hospitals and institutions because my body, I had stuck needles in my body in every place I could think of. Physical. The mental, I was so insane, I didn't know I was insane. You know, I was crazy. Because I was simply telling myself that I was okay. You know, I was all right. And I know the day that I was insane because I would always try to do drugs a different way, and I didn't even have sense enough to realize that the drugs was killing me. I've been to 7 detoxes and Lord knows how many treatment centers, and I was still telling myself that I was okay, and all I had to do was try a different way. I wasn't going to that detox no more. I was going to go up to one up Wisconsin Avenue, and that will make things all right. That's crazy. I wasn't going to snort dope no more. I wasn't going to shoot no dope no more. I was going to snort it, do it differently, and it was going to be all right. Mental, crazy. You know, honesty. You know, and just admitting that I was quite something for me to get honest with that, because I was dishonest. I always been dishonest because it was comfortable for me. It was more comfortable for me to tell a lie than it was for me to tell the truth. Today I'm getting better, so telling a lie bothers me. But the truth of the matter is, it was more comfortable for me to make you think that I was something that I wasn't, so that you can accept me, because that was so important to me. Dishonest. But today I can come, and that's through the help of this program, and through the work of sponsors, and doing what y'all told me, that I can be honest and simply say, I am an addict and I need help and I don't want to hurt no more. I can be open-minded enough today to say that there is something greater than me that possibly could help me, restore me to sanity. I didn't feel like that when I first came in here. I had to come to believe in something greater than me. I had to come to believe that, be open-minded enough to hear y'all talking and talking about the goodness of this program and how things was working for y'all. And I had to be open-minded enough not to punch holes in y'all's story and talk about what kind of shoes you got on and what you look like and what hairdresser you go to or don't go to, for y'all to give me some help that I needed. Open-minded. And once I was able to do that, I opened the door to let the power come in. And first of all, it was my sponsor, and Donna, I love you, to help me. And that wasn't even easy, y'all, the power. They didn't, you know, they talk about the power, coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves, or how power could restore us to sanity. And, you know, I had to say little simple things. You know, my program has always been real simple. I got to keep it real simple, you know. Little simple things like, okay. Somebody said, okay, Cassie, well, you think you got so much power. Can you wake yourself up in the morning? And I'm like, okay. Got me on that one. Say no. Okay, well, you think you got so much power. Can you make a universe? Nope. Opening the door. Being open enough to realize that it was a power greater than myself that could restore me and help me. And just the simple fact of being so beat down when I got here. I was 45 years old. You know, I'm 50 now. And I was beaten down. Just that fact made me become willing to want to do something different. But I ain't always willing. You know, my sponsor shared something with me not too long ago about becoming willing and being willing. And y'all, I just ain't always willing. I ain't always willing to do the work that I need to do to get better. Because it's so much more comfortable for me to stay in some insanity. It truly is. But she shared with me that, Cassie, sometimes maybe you need to just pray for the willingness to become willing to do what you got to do. And because prayer, y'all, has become my greatest source of strength, I have to use that as the tool to do whatever I need to do. Pray for the willingness to become willing. To change. And I'm willing to go to any length. And I heard that, you know, when I first came in early on, you know, you go to any length. But as time goes on and I understand the program a little better and it's, you know, defined to me a little better, you know, truly, I know today that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to stay clean. We talk all the good stuff about our primary purposes, you know, to stay clean and all of that. But once again, y'all, I ain't always willing to do what it takes because it's uncomfortable. Honesty, open-minded, and willing. And for me, that's the first three steps of this program. And that's simply, as I see it, and as I've been taught, is getting honest with God. And as you go on down in the steps, getting honest with yourself and others. And getting honest with God was also one of the first ways that I started to get honest. Because it was easier to talk to God than it was to talk to y'all. Because I had the tendency to lie to y'all. I would tell y'all, you know, I want to glamorize stuff. I want to make my shit sound good. I want to look good. I ain't want to tell y'all, come in here and tell y'all that, you know, I've been to 7 treatment centers. I have a pair of pink glasses on with a piece of tape stuck here and my hair matted to my head. And I had walked off some jobs and some other jobs that asked me to leave. I want to tell y'all I resigned. Bullshit. You know. Getting honest. And today, as I said before, you know, getting honest takes different levels in my recovery, you know. And we talk about the gut level and the cash register type honesty, how we talk about, you know, yeah, I stole something from my mother, that kind of thing. But I'm talking about being honest with myself now. I'm beginning to learn how to get honest with Cassie and to thy own self be true. I put that on the stroll mark here on my computer. To thy own self be true. Getting honest with me. Getting honest with me, the fact that I'm 50 years old and they ain't hollering like they used to holler. You know? Getting honest with myself, and you ain't all of that. You don't know everything, because I want to think that I know some stuff. And then being open-minded enough when y'all tell me, guys, what the hell are you talking about? That ain't right. Or not getting pissed off with my sponsor, because, girl, please, open-minded enough to let somebody come in and help me. And then being willing enough to do the work, do what it takes. They say that the three things that most defeat us in our recovery is truly those three things. If we have the intolerance to be honest or no capacity to be honest or somehow can't be open-minded and not willing to change, then we will be defeated in recovery. I'm an addict named Cassie, and thanks for letting me share. I believe the meeting is open.
Thanks, Cassie. Well, we've got plenty of time left in the meeting, but before we open it up, Let's see. Before we open up the meeting to those who would like to share, please remember to come up to the microphone one at a time. Also, try to keep in mind that there are other addicts who are waiting to share. If you don't want to be recorded, please inform the person taping so they can turn off the recorder while they're sharing. So if there's anybody else who would like to come up and share on honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, please do so. Nobody wants to share?
I'm Andrew Maddox.
Hey, Andrew.
This is an interesting place for me to be, especially standing up in front of you. I celebrated 15 years on April 6th. That's not the end of the story. That's not the end of the story. And I'm usually the quiet type that would sit in the back. Most people in my own home group wouldn't even know who I was. I've grown tremendously in this program. I brought myself from that quiet kid who didn't think that that seat belonged to me because I didn't shoot dope, because I didn't deserve it. I grew up with low self-esteem my whole life. Family related, whatever you want to put a label on it, but I used so I didn't have to have that feeling. The biggest thing, and that what brought me to this meeting today, was looking at the title, Honesty, Open-Mindedness, and Willingness. I had my knee operated on March 22nd. I've had to take medications while in recovery, and I've done fine in the past, and I did it properly, and I flushed them when I was done. I had to take Percocet for a while, and then I switched to Lortab for a while, and I developed a habit. And after 15 years, celebrated last week, I've got part of a day today. It's a difficult thing because my ego tells me I didn't really relapse. I was, it said to take one or two, but I took three because three felt better than two. Three was better than two. And I couldn't deal with that one. And then the neighbor across the hall who happened to have some Xanax, I needed something just to chill out so I didn't have to take that narcotic anymore, because I've never had a narcotic habit. And it's a really scary animal, this disease. And this disease just told me, well, it's not really a relapse, because if you did relapse, man, you might as well do it right. Let's go out and get it done. And, you know, that's been my battle for the past few days. Well, I didn't relapse because I didn't really abuse anything, and I did it as directed, and, well, sort of directed. And, I might as well just use hard, and then I can come back in here. But, I've gained many things in this program, including my self-esteem, including the ability to stand up in front of people, which I don't think I've ever done this, actually. I've got a job I love. I couldn't have done that before without this program, because I would have been too much low self-esteem to think I deserved it. I have 15 years of knowledge in this program. I'll be 32 next month, and that means I got here when I was 17, whether I really wanted to be here or not at that time, but I've learned a lot over the years here. And fortunately I came to this convention because this is right where I needed to be, and in this meeting. Thank you.
Hey group, I'm Cliff, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And you know, I say that real gratefully, because I did everything not to be in this room tonight. And I say that because in my addiction, I did everything not to be here. I could have been dead. But today I'm here. And I'm glad I'm here. This is my first convention. And I'm with the grace of God, it won't be my last. You know, I've been teased all day about walking down the street. Because I didn't know what to do. I've just been walking and walking. But I've been enjoying myself. Nobody told me this started at 5, this started at 4, this started at 6. Nobody told me anything. I had to figure out stuff myself, which was all right. Because all my life I've been trying to figure out stuff. But I went walking. I was walking down the street. And on my way walking down there, I knew that the only place I could get a pack of cigarettes was in this deli. And I knew that they had liquor and everything in there. I knew somebody was going to see me. And come to find out, everybody saw me. You know, everybody saw me. So, in the process of walking down there, I'm saying, who's going to see me going in this store? But I knew I was going to get some cigarettes. I'm just hoping they knew the same thing, you know. But anyway, you know, I'm new in recovery. I have 15 months. You know, and I feel good about that because I have, for many years, I have never went 15 months without a drink or a drug. I had to have something, you know. And at one time, I thought I wasn't going to make it. And it's still a struggle for me because I think about drugs. I think about my Hennessy, my Remy. I think about that. Wild Irish too. I think about that too, you know. And I'm glad today I'm just thinking about it and not acting, you know. I've been through a lot in my life, and I'm still going through a lot. I've been in the penitentiary half of my life, and today I'm trying to erase all that from my life. I got a ticket about 3 weeks ago. And they tell me you got 2 weeks or whatever to pay the ticket. I paid it that day. And the reason why I paid it that day, because I didn't want it to double, and then I didn't want them people stopping me again saying, you pay your ticket and putting some damn handcuffs on me about a ticket. But to beat it all, I was going to Fifth Street Market. For anybody who knows where Fifth Street Market is, it's in D.C. They sell grapes, oranges, and all that old kind of stuff. And I was going up a one-way street, and the police pulled me over. And you're talking about something was scary because I haven't been questioned, stopped, or confronted by a police since I've been home. And when he pulled me over and was on my way to the car, my hands started shaking. And I had to get a grip on myself because I'm saying, what you shaking for? Your license all right. You don't have no dope. So what's going on with you? But it was just the near fact that I was being stopped by a police. So when he came to the car, he said, sir, you know you're going up the one-way street? And I got honest with him. I said, sir, I ain't gonna lie to you. I said, yes, I do. And I told him just like that. I said, yes, I do. And I said, and I'm gonna be honest with you, sir. I said, I swear to God, man, I went up this one-way street today, just morning. I said, I'm going right over to that market to get some grapes. I said, I did not have the foggers. Ideally, it was one-way until today, till you just stopped me. I was looking, and I saw it. So he gave me a warning ticket. And to show you how, not scared, but how I didn't want to really keep being this police in my prison, I said, sir, when you gave me the ticket, I said, thank you very much, officer. I said, thank you, man. You know, and I really wanted to shake his hand because I wanted him to get the fuck away from me. Leave me alone. I wanted to go, you know, so I didn't know anything about a warning ticket, so I went down North Capitol and Florida Avenue, and I went in the barber shop, and I asked the guy, I said, man, I got a warning ticket. What they going to do? He said, they ain't going to do nothing. You can tear it up. He said, but the warning ticket is, so if you go up a one-way street again, they going to deal with you. So now when I'm driving, I swear I looks at every, I be looking, I said, that's a one-way? And I be peeping all over the tree. No, I'm all right, you know. But life has been good. It's been real grand for me. You know, this is the first time in my life in a long time that I wanted to live. Because there's been times I done woke up and was mad that I woke up. I was real mad because I knew I had to go out in the street and do this and do that and do this. I didn't know if I was going to be killed or kill somebody or just trick somebody out all their money and didn't have to hide because I couldn't go down that way to spend it. You know, I just didn't know. But today I don't live like that. And I just want to thank everybody for listening to me and thank myself for doing what I'm doing. Thank you.
And you know, I've been around the program, Narcotics Anonymous, around the program for about 12, 13, 14 years. And I'm just coming up on 15 months. Because I honestly accepted that maybe I have a problem, you know, just maybe. Today I know I have a problem. One day at a time I know I have a problem. You know, honesty. You know, when I'm a twin. And when I was a little baby, I had a twin sister. And my mother, she would come in, she would give both of us bottles. And I drink all, set me up and watch. I was doing the switcheroo, being dishonest. I was born dishonest. Dishonest, still a thief. But, I'm from the D.C. area also, and, you know, honestly, this program works. It works. So I've been in and out. You know, I done had, I just started thinking, 30 days about 30 times. 30 days about 30 times. 24 hours about 2,400 times. 2,400 times. Because every time, wait a minute, I get 20, because I always knew. I knew that, because I used to go to meetings all the time. And I heard y'all say, you know, just 24 hours, just 24 hours. So I said, damn, I'm going to get 24 hours. After I read it, come back in. I'm going to get 24 hours. All I need is the first 24 hours. 24 hours over the last, 2,400 times. Ain't that something? But I kept coming back. Because y'all said, keep coming back. So I honestly kept coming back. Yes, I did. And what happened this last time, went up to the VA. I heard them talking about the VA. Where I was living in my apartment, they used to knock on the door. I used to run to the door and do our thing, and then I'd go back and listen to my gospel on the radio. Wake back up, you know, knock on the door, run in and do my thing, go back, listen to my gospel. People used to throw rocks at the window. Oh, man. I might have heard them talking about a car. I used to get my car away, and every time I hit, that's my car. Listen to all these, you know what I mean? You know how your car sounds, so every time I hear a car, that's my car, Man, all that for all them years, man. All I had to do was come in here and surrender. But y'all said surrender, but you never told me how to. Or if you did, I just wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. But I just, you know, one day I said, Satan, I don't belong to you. I just said, no more. I said, this is it. No. I was trying to make, I'm a religious type guy, right? And I was trying to make year 2000, you know, because I thought Jesus was coming back. And I said, I'm going to be clean for when he come back. You know what I mean? But it was January the 25th of 2000. I was 25 days late. Okay? Well, I'm here today. Thank God. Honestly, I'm here today and, service. If y'all go to the Reeves Club, y'all come in there, you always see me doing something. Mopping the floor, coffee, anything. Because gratitude, man, I'm so thankful. Send all the time in and out. What you want me to do? What does God want me to do? Tell me. Because this thing is beautiful. It's beautiful. Being honest, man, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm still at the job. A lot of y'all know where I work. And the post office, and they my old crazy, you know, they put up with me, man. They love me until I learn to love myself, man. Y'all love me until I learn to love myself, man. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me. Honestly speaking, I'm getting better one day at a time, y'all. You know, honestly, found it. I was the problem. I used to blame the job. And I remember when I was in the Army, I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I said, I live in D.C. I said, I ain't gonna never wake up before 5 o'clock in the morning because I live in a city where it's a 9 to 5, right? So I ain't gonna gotta go to work at no 5 o'clock in the morning. And I made a promise to myself. Got a job at the post office. They said, we want you there at 5:30 in the morning. I said, yeah. And I was mad because I made a promise. Never get up before 5 o'clock in the morning. No. And I had to do it. And I was mad. The job! Oh, man. Honestly, I found it was me. I'm the problem. It's me, oh Lord. Me. And once I start honestly looking at me, and got a sponsor, y'all said surrender. Surrender means go to meetings, call your sponsor, talk and listen, you know what I mean? Pick up the cuffs, man. Just get on the pad and stay. Honestly, work it. And he mentioned something about a being without sex or without a relationship this time back after going in and out, you know, different reasons. You ain't got to worry about me tricking or whatever. No. You know, so far when I learned. See, it seemed like I'm so hard-headed that I had to bump my head so many times and now I know. No, I ain't going to do that. So I ain't no relationship, nothing, none of that. Because it seemed like, you know, I'm just grateful. I'm so thankful being clean because I was brave, emotional. I was the crazy one. Crazy. Now, honestly, thank y'all for this program. Thanks for letting me share.
Hello, my name is Tyrone. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I like to say that because I started out from drinking alcohol. And part of my story is I hear in the thing that says alcohol is a drug too. And when I'm in the alcohol program, it teaches to stay on alcohol and stay off the drugs. But I know that if I didn't take that alcohol, if I don't put that first drink, I won't go to drugs. So I have to keep that up front with myself. When I came up, I started drinking because of low self-esteem. I found that out today. I always wanted to be a part of something. You know, when I go to parties, I know the girls are always there with everybody but me. You know, and I guess I grew up with low self-esteem. And when I drank that alcohol, I remember the change. I was able to talk to the girls. I felt like I belonged to everybody. I could walk into any place and fit in. And the reason I started out this with my story by alcohol, oh, first I want to thank y'all for sharing too. The reason I started with alcohol because as the disease kept progressing, I never thought I'd grow up to be an addict. You know, I never thought I'd grow up to be an addict. And as the disease kept progressing, I go into these parties, I see everybody doing cocaine. And cocaine, putting up a nose, and watching Superfly in the 70s, you know, that fascinated me. So I'm at a party one day and seeing somebody doing this and wanting to belong. And I didn't get anything out of cocaine at first. You know, I just started putting it up my nose. Then I finally got it. You know, how I knew I had it because I went to ask the phone one time. My bottom lip wouldn't stay still. And I looked in the mirror and I started looking good to myself. And I remember one day I was sitting on a couch. I like to hang out with older ladies. And there's two big ladies, one sitting here and one sitting here. And we're drinking. And I go in the bathroom and take my hit. And I come back out. I'm sitting between them. And the biggest woman, she gets up and she moves over to the other side of the couch. And I don't say, why are you moving away from Tyrone like that? She said, I don't know, but he's starting to look at me funny. Man, the more I drunk and the more I slept, the better that old woman started looking. I guess I liked it because whenever I felt my low self-esteem going down, it always picked me up. I hear the professor mention about jobs. I could always get jobs, but I could never keep them. And I never found out why I couldn't keep jobs. I remember one time I was on a job. Now, crack come into the picture. And how crack came into the picture was, crack came into the picture the same way the cocaine did. Being around people, places, and things. If you're around somebody that's doing something on a constant basis, you obviously going to try. But I'm going to speed my story up in 15 minutes. I want to tell you about the incident about the crack thing. Now, I've lost my job through crack. Time? Okay, thank you. Oh, that's okay. All right, but I'm going to speak. I had lost many jobs through crack. I had went from like up here to down here to selling it. Well, I wasn't really selling it at the time, but we come up with this idea where we're going to make some money selling crack. And I had got so good at buying cocaine and cooking up crack that I cooked up. The girl gave me, I think, $250. And I went and bought 2 half-a-quarters. And I cooked it up real good, big rocks like that. Now, we're going to sell it. I think when I cooked it up and I counted it up, we had about $2,000 street value. Now, she been an addict and me been an addict, we got to test it out to see if it tastes good, right? So we take a hit. The next morning, I guess y'all know the rest of the story. You know? Anyway, if you only got a little time, but I'm going to say one thing about this program. I'm not really nervous. I'm happy. I'm really happy because I'm not doing those things anymore. I'm working today. God, I put things back into my life. I also heard you mention about God. This program would be nothing without God. And I'm mumbling on and on because there's so many things I got in my mind and so many things I've learned about this program. And I think I'm still speeding, but it's okay today. As long as I'm sober and don't and stay away from the first one, I'll be all right.
All right, I'd like to thank everybody for a good meeting.